Hello, welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce our moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Breast Cancer in Men, Diagnosis, Treatment, and Survivorship. And this program has been recommended by a number of people, men living with breast cancer or who know people who have breast cancer, men who have breast cancer, and this program is made possible through an independent grant from Merck and Company, Inc., and I really want to thank them for supporting this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, there are a few things I just would like to cover. We have over 154 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from many countries, Canada, Egypt, India, Iran, Kuwait, Oman, Pakistan, Philippines, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call, and a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Catherine Ruddy. And Dr. Ruddy is Professor of Oncology, Mayo Clinic. And Dr. Ruddy will be presenting an overview of the diagnosis and treatment of breast cancer in men, including stage grading and staging of breast cancer, detection of breast cancer in men, mammogram, ultrasound, biopsy, understanding the treatment of breast cancer in men, surgery, radiation, immunotherapy, targeted treatments, definition of genetics and genomics of breast cancer in men, tools that help predict the risk of breast cancer recurrence in men, how genomic testing informs breast cancer treatment and planning for men with breast cancer, critical role of genetic and genomic testing throughout all stages of breast cancer in men, the value of early testing to inform treatment choices, their role in selecting your best cancer treatment, preventing and managing treatment side effects and long-term effects of breast cancer in men, and follow-up care, survivorship care plan. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Ruddy.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. It's a great pleasure to be part of this call. I'll start by talking about the overall impact of breast cancer in men in this country. There are approximately 2,000 new diagnoses of breast cancer per year in men, and we know that the incidence of male breast cancer is rising, but still this only accounts for about a half to 1% of all breast cancers in the U.S. There are some other countries where the proportion of breast cancers that are diagnosed in men is higher than that. And when a breast cancer is diagnosed in either a man or a woman, it's important to understand the grade of the cancer. Grade really reflects how abnormal and correlates with how fast the cancer is likely growing. Breast cancer grades range from 1 to 3, with 1 indicating slow growth and 3 indicating fast growth. Tumor stage is also important. There are different frameworks that are used to stage breast cancer, some of which include information about the hormone receptor status of the cancer, but all of which include the size of the tumor in the breast and whether it spread to any lymph nodes in the underarm area or elsewhere. Breast cancers in men are often hard, non-tender masses that are between 3 and 3.5 centimeters on average in size. And when a man or his doctor identifies that he has a breast mass, he should undergo breast imaging, which usually includes both a mammogram and an ultrasound, just as a woman would. If that imaging or physical exam is concerning for cancer, a biopsy should be performed. There's nipple retraction, nipple discharge, or nipple skin changes in approximately half of men with breast cancer. And often, lymph nodes are enlarged nearby because the cancer is spread there by the time of diagnosis. That happens in about 40% of men with breast cancer. The average age of breast cancer diagnosis is approximately a decade older in men than in women. So on average, breast cancers are diagnosed in the 60s in men, while in the 50s in women. Matched by age and stage, breast cancer prognoses are actually equivalent or better in men compared to women. And survival has improved for both men and women in recent years. We know that younger men and those without any spread of the cancer to nearby lymph nodes do have even better prognoses. Our treatments for male breast cancer are based upon what's been proven to work in women because we've never to date successfully enrolled enough patients to a clinical trial of breast cancer therapy that is focused specifically on men to use that information to guide our therapies. And most men whose cancer has not spread to distant organs before their diagnosis go on to have a modified radical mastectomy, which really means that the entire breast is removed. But there are some men who choose lumpectomy, which entails just removal of the part of the breast that contains the cancer. Radiation is usually administered after lumpectomy and sometimes also after mastectomy if the tumor is larger and or if it has spread to the nearby lymph nodes. After surgery, but usually before any radiation that's needed, chemotherapy may be recommended, particularly for younger men and those with higher tumor grades, as well as those with lymph node involvement of the cancer. It's pretty rare that immunotherapy is added to chemotherapy in men because immunotherapy is usually reserved for hormonally insensitive breast cancers, and those are rare in men. More than 90% of male breast cancers are hormonally sensitive, and this is an even greater proportion than in female breast cancers. And that means that male breast cancer treatment almost always includes 5 to 10 years of an anti-estrogen pill such as tamoxifen. Tamoxifen blocks the estrogen receptor, and generally we start tamoxifen after any chemotherapy that's needed finishes if it is needed. A targeted oral therapy pill, such as ribociclib or abemaciclib, may be combined with the anti-estrogen pill for the first 2 to 3 years to help it work better. And there have been a lot of terrific advances in breast cancer care over the last decade, and we expect to have additional advances in the years to come. Turning now to genetic testing, this is strongly recommended for all men with breast cancer. This usually entails sending a blood or saliva specimen to allow for an assessment of the genes that a man inherited from his parents to determine if he carries a mutation that is known to be associated with risk of breast cancer, such as one in the BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene. Finding out about these inherited genetic variants can impact a man's care. For example, some mutations in the BRCA2 gene are associated with an increased risk of prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, gallbladder cancer, gastric cancer, and melanoma, in addition to breast cancer. So different types of screening would be offered for some of these other cancers for men found to have these mutations. We also sometimes recommend genomic testing, which is different from genetic testing in that it refers to testing of the genes of the cancer itself rather than genes of the person. And genomic testing is often done to determine what treatments might be most effective against the cancer. Oncotype DX is an example of genomic testing in that it assesses 21 genes of the tumor to estimate risk of recurrence for a stage 1 to 3 breast cancer and to evaluate if chemotherapy is likely to substantially reduce that risk. With regard to breast imaging after treatment for male breast cancer, the American Society of Clinical Oncology recommendations include an annual mammogram of the affected breast if a man has had a lumpectomy. If a man's had a mastectomy, and if he carries a predisposing genetic mutation that would increase his risk of a new cancer in the other breast, an annual mammogram may be considered for that other breast. For men who finish treatment for stage 1 to 3 breast cancer, clinicians should provide information about the treatments received and plans for follow-up care. Sometimes this takes the form of a survivorship care plan, which is a document that survivors can refer to in the future, and that includes information about treatments received and about the type of cancer that someone had, as well as what to expect in the years to come. Before I close, I want to highlight a very important new male breast cancer trial called the ETHIN trial. This trial is open at Mayo Clinic, at Dana-Farber, and at other sites, and hopes to help us understand what the best endocrine treatments are for men with breast cancer. Men can consider enrolling on this trial before they start any treatment for breast cancer, including before any surgery and radiation, before any anti-estrogen therapy and chemotherapy. And this trial compares tamoxifen to a different type of anti-estrogen treatment, aromatase inhibitor. And in the trial, men also may be assigned to get an additional medication called Dagrelix to suppress testosterone levels. The trial also assesses if the targeted drug abemaciclib will enhance tumor shrinkage when given before surgery. If this ETHIN trial enrolls enough men, it will hugely advance our understanding of optimal male breast cancer care. With that, I'll stop speaking and thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Ruddy. That was a superb presentation. Just outstanding and stellar. And you know, the first speaker, and you really have set the stage for today's program, giving people a lot of information about breast cancer in men. And I know there'll be a lot of questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Mara Rendy. And Dr. Rendy is a pathologist specializing in breast cancer, Abbott Northwestern Hospital, Hospital Pathology Associates, and Alina Health, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Dr. Rendy will be addressing the role of the pathologist, the difference between inherited and acquired or sporadic gene mutations, understanding the types of gene mutations, and genetic testing, including testing for BRCA mutations. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Rendy.
Hi, my name is Mara Rendy, and I'm a breast pathologist at Hospital Pathology Associates in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about male breast cancer. As you know, male breast cancer is relatively rare, making up only about 1% of all breast cancers. But it does happen, and in many ways it is similar to female breast cancer. But there are some important differences. Mainly, male breast cancer is more often caused by a genetic mutation, which we will talk about in a little bit. But before we do that, let's talk about the role of a pathologist in breast cancer care, as this is not one of the physicians you tend to see as a patient. When you feel a palpable lump or have some reason to have a biopsy, what will happen is you go in for the biopsy and a small amount of tissue is removed from the lesion. That can be done by a radiologist or a surgeon. Once that tissue has been removed, that tissue is sent to the pathology lab. What happens at that point is we put this tissue in specific chemicals so we can do appropriate testing, and then we actually embed or melt the tissue into paraffin wax. What this allows us to do is once the wax then solidifies, we can then cut thin shavings of the tissue from the wax. You can think about this like a meat slicer with deli meat. You just kind of make little tiny thin shavings of it. Once we have a very thin slice of the tissue, which has the wax around it, we then can lay that tissue down on a slide. And then after a few more chemicals go onto it, then we are able to look at it under the microscope. And that is the job of a pathologist. They really look under the microscope to figure out what's going on. So when I look at the tissue under the microscope, I can then determine if it is cancerous or not. And there are many other things that breast masses can be other than cancer, but if it is cancer, there are several tests that need to be done on it to then determine how best to treat the cancer. And it's the role, one of the main roles of the pathologist is to do those tests to make sure that the patient gets the right treatment. So the main tests that are done on breast cancer are tests for estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and then HER2, which is a protein that stimulates cells to grow. Typically, we associate hormones like estrogen and progesterone with females, but males do have small amounts of these hormones, and actually 80% of all male breast cancers actually depend on these hormones to grow. There are also conditions in which men have more estrogen in their bodies, which can increase the risk of breast cancer. Some of these are some of these conditions that lead to increased levels of estrogen is a genetic condition called Klinefelter syndrome, in which the patient has an extra X chromosome, but also obesity and liver disease or estrogen treatment and prostate cancer are also common ways that estrogen levels are increased in males and can lead to extra estrogen around in the patient. But let's get back to the breast cancer tissue testing. One of the most important things that the oncologist needs to know about a breast cancer is if the breast cancer depends on the hormones estrogen and progesterone. So if a cancer expresses the estrogen receptor, that means it may depend upon estrogen for its growth. The same is true of progesterone receptor. If the cancer expresses that protein, then it is likely depending somewhat on that hormone to grow. Then what the oncologist can do is we have medications that can block estrogen receptor and can block the progesterone receptor, so they can give those specific medications. So it's one of the main roles of the pathologist is, one, determine if it's cancer, and then two, if it is cancer, to determine, does it express estrogen receptor? Does it express progesterone receptor? Does it express HER2? And then that tells the oncologist how to treat the patient. The pathologist will then issue a report that says what type of cancer the tissue is, and it will give numbers for the estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and HER2 in the report as well. So that's on the biopsy. But what happens after surgery? The pathologist will also be involved with the excision specimen after surgery. In that case, once the surgeon takes the tissue out, it gets sent to the pathology lab where specific parts of that tissue are turned into slides in much the same way that the biopsy tissue was. Then looking at the tissue under the microscope, the pathologist can determine things like how big the tumor is, if the tumor was entirely removed, what the margin status is, and the pathologist can also look at any lymph nodes that might have been removed to see if they have cancer. The surgeon, the radiation oncologist, and the oncologist will then use all of this information to determine which treatments are most likely to work. So that's the main job of the pathologist in the care of male breast cancer. Now I want to talk a little bit about the genetics of breast cancer, specifically in men. We always hear about genetic risk factors for breast cancer, but the terminology can be a bit confusing. With all cancers, there can be a hereditary risk, which means you inherit a faulty gene from your parents that can cause cancer, and you also have the risk of passing that faulty gene on to your kids. In females, hereditary breast cancers account for only about 5 to 10% of all breast cancers. However, in males, up to 40% of breast cancers are caused by hereditary mutations. This is why all men that have breast cancer are referred to a genetic counselor who will go through your family tree, and also send testing to determine if you have specific genetic mutations. When the genetic counselor is looking at the family tree, they're looking for specific types of cancers in certain family members. The genetic testing, the actual testing, is done on your blood, not on the breast tissue, because they want to look for mutations that are in all of your cells because you inherited it from your parents. The main mutations that they are looking for with hereditary breast cancer in men is going to be the BRCA genes, or BRCA genes. There are two of them. There's BRCA1 and BRCA2. There are other genes as well, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. But before we get into those specifics, you might wonder where the rest of the 60% of cancers come from in men, and also the 90 to 95% of cancers that come from women that are not hereditary or are not inherited. Those cancers are due to what we call sporadic or acquired mutations. That means that the breast tissue itself has picked up a mutation during your lifetime, and that is what leads to the cancers. What's important about sporadic or acquired mutations is that these mutations cannot be passed on to your kids and other family members are unlikely to be at risk. The mutations are still in your breast cancer, but they are not able to be passed on or unlikely that other family members would have a cancer. So because up to 40% of all male breast cancers are due to inherited mutations, it's important to know which genes can cause this. As I said, BRCA, or BRCA, is the main breast cancer gene. In fact, that's where it gets its name, BR, breast, CA, cancer. However, the BRCA genes can also cause other cancers, such as prostate and pancreatic cancer, melanoma, and ovarian cancer in women. And this is why genetic counselors will ask about a variety of cancers in your whole family, not just breast cancer. There are two variants of BRCA, BRCA1 and BRCA2, and what both genes do when they work normally is to make sure that your DNA does not have any errors in it and to repair any errors that might be there when the cell divides. So this is quite complicated, but I think the easiest way to think about it is to think of it as a spell check that corrects the spelling in your DNA. Without that spell check, there are words being misspelled, and those can lead to cancer, those misspellings. BRCA2 is a much more common cause of male breast cancer than BRCA1. But BRCA1 can also lead to male breast cancer. So when you are genetically tested, both of those genes will be tested for. These are the two of the main genes that get tested for when your genetic counselor sends off for testing. But there are other hereditary genes in male breast cancer. The main ones are CHEK2, which is CHEK2, PALB, P-A-L-B, and ATM. And there are others, but those are much more rare. These genes, the CHEK2, PALB, and ATM, these genes are also involved in spell checking the DNA to make sure that all of the, quote, words are spelled correctly. So when there is a mistake in them or it's a faulty gene, then you end up getting misspellings in the DNA. So why is it important to be tested for genetic mutations if you have male breast cancer? For one, it can actually influence how your cancer is treated. We know that specific drugs work better in patients that have BRCA mutations, and so if a patient has that mutation, we want to make sure and target it with specific drugs. In addition, genetic testing can also have a profound effect on all of your family. If you have a hereditary breast cancer, your family members may also have the gene and they can be tested for that mutation as well. By testing for the mutation in family members that don't have cancer, they can determine if they need extra screening or if they want to have a surgery to lower their risk of getting cancer. And this isn't just for the females in your family. Males should be tested as well for their risk, both for breast cancer, but also for things like pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, and melanoma. That is all I have.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Rendy. That was just a wonderful presentation. A lot of information for people to absorb, and just excellent information. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian at the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center, and she'll be addressing the role of the oncology dietitian and nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. It's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. Nutrition and hydration are fundamental in providing our body the ability to do what it needs to do to function and giving us the quality of life that we hope to have. The question a lot of patients bring to me is, what should I eat or what should I avoid while I'm getting cancer treatment? Or now that cancer treatment's over, what should I be focusing on nutritionally? The answer to that question is going to be individualized based on your treatment, any other comorbidities you may have, your level of nourishment at the time, just to name a few. However, in general, a whole foods plant-based diet where about two-thirds of your plate is covered by a plant-based food, such as a fruit, vegetable, grain, bean, pea, lentil, nut, seeds, and the other third covered with a lean protein, such as a wild-caught fish, a white meat, chicken or turkey, a lean red meat, and you can even occasionally do a complete plant-based diet meal. The plant-based foods provide our body with antioxidants, phytochemicals, fiber, and the lean protein provides our body the building blocks to help repair and build tissue. The key to a whole foods plant-based diet is you want the food to look like it was when it was harvested. So if you're eating something with apples in it, for example, rather than eating an apple protein bar, I want you to choose the apple, and then we can add a whole food product that provides the protein component in addition with it. A dietitian is part of your healthcare team and is here to support you and help you with these individualized questions and concerns to help bring a plan to fruition. As you go through treatment, your diet can change based on any side effects you're experiencing. Some of the potential side effects might include things like a poor appetite, maybe nausea, vomiting, a sore mouth, or sore throat, diarrhea, maybe fatigue. If you're not able to meet your nutrition goals, it may delay your treatment. So being connected with your healthcare team is very important, even from the very beginning. The dietitian can help adjust any diet issues based on your side effects to help you accomplish the goals, to help you be successful throughout your treatment. Even if you're overweight, you can become malnourished. So I tell people, don't look at yourself and think, oh gosh, I have some weight I can lose. That's not the gauge for nourishment. And so please do reach out to your healthcare team and your dietitian to help get your individualized plan. There are medications to assist with some of the side effects, such as pain or any of the side effects I mentioned earlier. So please connect with your healthcare team as quickly as possible so they can help address those needs. Hydration is essential. It's important. Each person needs about 8 to 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid a day. Things like water, milk, juice are some examples. But again, connecting with your healthcare team for your unique needs is really the goal. In closing, there are several members of the team. The dietitian is one of them, and we're here to support you. Please reach out to us so we can help support you as quickly as possible. Thank you so much. I'm going to hand the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. That was a wonderful presentation, full of information about eating and tips on eating and healthy eating. So thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks a lot. And our next speaker is Ms. Christine Monaco. And Ms. Christina Monaco, and she's an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, and she'll be addressing support for men living with and surviving breast cancer, and then Cancer Care's free programs and services, and Cancer Care Hope Line, giving you our Hope Line number and also information about our website. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Monaco.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and hi, everybody. As Dr. Messner mentioned, my name is Christina. I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, and we are a nonprofit organization national that provides free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. There are many aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that could be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, including making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, clinical trials, and communication with one's medical team or loved ones. Men diagnosed with breast cancer often face significant psychosocial challenges due to the societal stigma and overall perception of breast cancer as a predominantly female condition. Many men may experience feelings of isolation, confusion, and difficulty in expressing their needs as they navigate both the physical effects of treatment and also the emotional toll of the diagnosis. Patients can play a role in advocating for themselves and their needs, as well as exploring available resources they could utilize for support. So this includes letting your providers know when you're struggling with side effects, feelings of worry, or day-to-day challenges. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services as well. Being a member in a support group can offer the opportunity to speak with others who are going through similar experiences as you are, obtain information, and provide support. Currently, Cancer Care offers several breast cancer-specific support groups online. We offer a breast cancer patient group, a breast cancer post-treatment survivorship group, and a metastatic breast cancer group. The breast cancer online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness and anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, provide practical information about treatment and resources, and address ways to communicate with one's medical team and loved ones. Our online support groups take place using a password-protected message board format, and they're led by a professional oncology social worker who offers support and guidance. These groups are held for 15 weeks at a time, and group members must register to join. You can register for an online support group through our website, cancercare.org, by selecting our services and then support groups, where it will give you a whole list of groups based on patients and you know the different categories. After completing the registration process on our website, members can participate by posting in the groups 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns throughout one's treatment. Please know that if you're encountering such financial hardships, there are organizations that may be able to help. Cancer Care's Resource Navigation offers a short-term, strength-based approach service to both patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. If you are interested in learning more about the support services we offer, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673 to speak to one of our oncology social workers. At Cancer Care, our social workers are trained in how a breast cancer diagnosis can impact an individual as well as their loved ones. It's been a pleasure to be a part of this program. Thank you for your time and attention, and I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Monica. That was a superb presentation. Wonderful resources for our participants. And so thank you so much. And I'll be questions to you during the Q&A. So now we're going to move right on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Sarah if she would explain to you how to post your questions. Sarah?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So this is a question for Dr. Ruddy. Since male breast cancer is so rare, is it hard to do clinical trials with this population?
Yes. Thank you for that question. That's exactly the issue prior studies, prior trials that have attempted to enroll specifically men have failed because I think it is, because the disease is rare, we haven't been able to get enough men to enroll at a specific site or even at a group of sites that get enough men such that the trial could be fully enrolled. In fact, there was one prior trial that I think was aiming to enroll 50 men and then did not get any men to enroll. In fact, and part of it is that we need to design our clinical trials in ways that the eligibility criteria, meaning, you know, what kinds of characteristics you have to have, like how big the tumor is or different characteristics of the patient and the cancer, to allow for as many people as possible to participate. And we hope that the Ethan trial will be able to successfully enroll. And we do already have men participating, but we are looking to enroll additional men and would love to have anyone who's interested participate.
Excellent, thank you. So a question for Dr. Ruddy. Does gynecomastia impact risk for breast cancer?
I think you were asking about gynecomastia, which basically refers to enlargement of the breast tissue. And there have been some studies have suggested that, yes, gynecomastia is a risk factor for male breast cancer. It's a little bit unclear about whether that's because gynecomastia can be associated with obesity, but it isn't always. Some men have gynecomastia without being overweight at all, or whether gynecomastia is linked in some people to differences in hormonal milieu. So it's a little bit unclear about whether it's the gynecomastia itself or some other associated characteristic that might be the reason that some studies have suggested that that could be a risk factor.
Excellent, thank you. Another question for Dr. Ruddy. Are mastectomy procedures different for men? Is it possible to conserve some tissue and/or muscle during the procedure?
Generally, when men undergo a modified radical mastectomy, it is a very similar procedure to what women undergo. However, there is a lower rate of reconstructive surgery chosen by men than women. Men could theoretically undergo a reconstructive procedure to when a mastectomy is done on one side to try to match the other side, the other breast. And I think men with gynecomastia, where the other breast is more sizable, may be more likely to opt for that.
Excellent, thank you. And a question for Ms. Monaco. Are there resources available to help find and talk to others in treatment, other men, other male patients with breast cancer?
Absolutely. So our online support groups are offered for everybody who's going through treatment. These are offered nationally. And as I mentioned, you could go onto our website at cancercare.org and do a short registration to gain access to this 24/7 message board. Another option, if you're looking for things more locally in your area, if you were to call us at our Hope Line, we do have oncology social workers on staff who are more than happy to help you look up any resources in your area for either other organizations that might be able to help or talk to you about ways that you can get connected at local hospitals, local treatment centers. Oftentimes, those are good places to look initially, but there definitely are resources out there.
Excellent. Thank you. A question for Dr. Ruddy. If hormone therapy is not working for more advanced breast cancer in men, would the next treatment step be chemotherapy?
So usually both for men and women who have hormonally sensitive advanced cancers, we do usually start with anti-estrogen treatment. And often if the cancer figures out a way to outsmart that initial anti-estrogen treatment, we usually switch to another anti-estrogen treatment. Often patients can receive multiple lines, even more than two, sometimes even three or four lines of anti-estrogen treatment before we need to switch to something like chemotherapy. But it's very much on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes there are situations where, particularly if anti-estrogen treatment didn't work, very quick, you know, if there was really no evidence of any response, and if we're more concerned that we need a faster response to the cancer, we do sometimes turn to chemotherapy as the second line of therapy.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question from Ms. Monaco. Where can I find information on support groups for myself and partner?
I'm sorry, would you mind repeating that? I had a hard time hearing you.
Where can I find information on support groups for myself and partner?
Sure, absolutely. So the support groups that we offer online, we do have a whole category for caregivers as well. Those are broken down. We have caregivers based on diagnosis and also by relationship to the person. So we do have spouse partner specific caregiving groups. I'd also like to mention that we have based on age as well. So for people that are between the ages of 20 and 39, there is, you know, of course, more specific issues that you might be going through at that time or specific transitions in your life. So we break those down by that as well. And then always giving us a call. I mentioned earlier our resource navigation program. Getting connected with one of our resource navigators can help you find practical and financial support and can also help connect you with other local services as well.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Ruddy. At what age should men with BRCA mutations start self-examining screening?
So I think this question pertains to someone who hasn't had any cancers but knows that they carry a BRCA mutation. I would say there's little downside to starting, you know, at, you know, even as young as 18 in terms of the downside of self-examination, but we don't actually have any guideline direction, to my knowledge, in terms of a specific age for that. The BRCA2 mutation is associated with a higher risk of male breast cancer than BRCA1, but we also don't have any distinct recommendations comparing recommendations for one gene versus another. So I would say if a man knows that he carries a BRCA mutation, he should discuss with his primary care provider recommendations for surveillance overall, not just breast cancer, but also potentially need for screening for other cancers.
Excellent, thank you. And then this question for Dr. Ruddy. Should I try to lose weight during treatment since I am overweight, or would it be better to maintain my current weight?
So weight loss during treatment generally is can be helpful depending on how what the type of treatment is, what the type of diet or exercise regimen is that you'd be considering. Overall, with breast cancer therapy, when people are receiving chemotherapy, we know that people do tend to gain weight during that time. And so usually we try to at least prevent that if someone's starting out overweight, although it can be difficult because sometimes if you're getting chemotherapy, the things that kind of sit well in your stomach might be things that do increase weight, and also it can be difficult to be as active during chemotherapy. So we encourage people to try to stay as active as they can and to try to at least watch portion size to prevent weight gain. Now, during anti-estrogen treatment, which, as I mentioned, lasts for usually at least 5 years, if not 10, for those who have been treated with curative intent for breast cancer, it certainly is advisable to not wait until the end of that to attempt weight loss if you are overweight and you're, either your oncologist or your primary care provider may have resources to help you with what that would look like from a diet and exercise standpoint.
Excellent. And another question for you, Dr. Ruddy. How can diet impact risk of breast cancer? Is alcohol included as a risk factor?
Alcohol is definitely a risk factor for breast cancer overall. Now, whether alcohol contributes or how much alcohol might contribute to male breast cancer risk is still a question. And similarly, we know that in female breast cancer survivors drinking after breast cancer can increase the risk of recurrence. We don't know that specifically for male breast cancer. So it is, because it is so rare, it's been more difficult to study this. I think it's pretty clear that alcohol increases the risk of multiple different cancers and also can increase the risk of recurrence of certainly breast cancer in women. So in general, we do recommend moderation and reducing alcohol intake as much as possible.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'm going to ask our speakers to provide takeaway from today's program. I have to say this is the first time we've offered a program on breast cancer in men, and it will not be the last time we'll do it. And this is an important topic, and many of you showed particular interest in this program. So we will be offering this program again. And it will be available on a podcast as a replay. It usually takes about a week for it to go up, and it's usually up for at least a year. So that, and it has closed captions, so you can both listen to the speakers and you can also read the closed caption as well. So I'm going to ask Dr. Ruddy to begin with the first takeaway, her takeaway from today's program. But do you like people to remember about the program?
I hope that people remember that we really do need clinical trials to specifically inform treatment for male breast cancer, and the Ethan trial is open. So if you do have newly diagnosed male breast cancer, if you have any friends or family members who do face a new diagnosis, please do think of this trial, and hopefully we can get additional answers with regard to optimal treatments.
And how would they get information about that trial? How would they...
you can find information either through Mayo Clinic or Dana-Farber or the Translational Breast Cancer Research Consortium. The overall PI of the trial is Pablo Leon at Dana-Farber. But as I said, we are a site, so you can also reach out to me. I would be happy to help you find the site closest to your home as well. If you don't live near either Rochester, Minnesota, or Boston, there are sites around the country that have this trial open.
Can we provide your website or some way to? Your email.
My Twitter is Catherine Ruddy MD. That's K A T H R Y N R U D D Y M D. Or on Facebook, if you look for Mayo Clinic, we have this trial advertised there. Or you can look on web search for Translational Breast Cancer Research Consortium, and that there's patient-facing material on that website where you'd be able to find information about the ETHAN trial. So it's ETHAN.
And we'll actually provide that information to all of our participants. We send a SurveyMonkey evaluation to everybody about a week after the program, and in that evaluation it's an evaluation of the program, but we'll also include all the resources, and we'll include the resources for you're getting more information about participating in this clinical trial, which is so important. And thank you very much. And Ms. Monaco, your takeaway from today's program?
Yeah, thank you. So my takeaway is that support is out there. I know that I mentioned a couple of different programs, but I also just want to remind people of the other educational materials that we have. We do have publications. Workshops like these are so wonderful to gain more knowledge and information. We also have webinars as well that are for patients and for their loved ones. So wanted to plug that. And then going off of what Dr. Ruddy was saying, we also have a partnership with a website called mytriallist.org that also has information on clinical trials. So to put that out there, there are treatment options, there is support. And, we are here to help. So, again, our phone number at our Hope Line at Cancer Care is 1-800-813-4673. Or, of course, you could go to our website at cancercare.org.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank our speakers. You've been really phenomenal today. And I want to thank all of our participants. You've asked really such great questions. And, of course, we couldn't take everyone's questions, so I do want to comment on that. For those of you who had a chance to ask a question, again, take your question and go back to your Treating Healthcare team and ask them your question. You've learned a lot from today's program, and so take what you've learned and go back to your Treating Healthcare team. Remember, they have all your records and all the information about you so that they can actually provide you with that information that you need. And they can also address your question, of course. And then for those of you who are in queue and are waiting to ask a question and didn't get to ask a question, please go back to your healthcare team because they, again, know you the best and they will be happy to address your questions. Also, I just want to remind all of you that one of the issues that's come up in a lot of our programs is that a lot of our participants are able to reach their physicians during the day or the healthcare team during the day, but evenings, weekends, and holidays seem to be particularly daunting sometimes for people. So I would very much suggest that you, the next time you see your doctor, you call your doctor's office, find out who you should call, evenings, weekends, and holidays. And sometimes the doctor on call, but they have access to your records. It's really important not to save your question until your next meeting with your doctor, particularly if you're very concerned or have an issue, or just if you really need some more information, or if you need a longer appointment with your doctor, that's another possibility. You can ask to schedule a longer appointment with your doctor. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today. It's a great program, and we hope to do more of them for men with breast cancer. Thank you.
Workshop, you may now disconnect. Have a great day, everyone.